House Revenue Committee will come to order, and for March 13th, 2007. We have three items on our agenda today, let's start with the public hearing on House Bill 2115, which extends forest products harvest tax for forest research and Oregon Forest Practices Act Administration to 2008-2009 calendar years. Did you have a further summary?
Just to add, Mr. Chair, to what was said previously in the public hearing on this particular bill, that the dollar amount cannot really be set until OFG has its budget ready and meets in Ways and Means in order to derive a rate.
Thank you. We have three people signed up to be heard on this bill today: Clark Seeley, Ray Wilkerson, and Christina McNitt. Am I close? Would you please come forward?
Good afternoon, Chair Barnhart, members of the committee. I'm Clark Seeley. I'm the Associate State Forester with the Oregon Department of Forestry. Thank you for the opportunity to be with you this afternoon and testify in support of House Bill 2115. The Oregon Forest Products Harvest Tax currently supports four functions of state government. A portion of the tax supports the Oregon Forest Resources Institute. A portion of the tax also supports the emergency fire, forest fire suppression activities of the state in combination with some other sources of revenue. Thirdly, the tax supports the administration of the Oregon Forest Practices Act. And finally, the tax supports, again, along with other revenues, operations of the Forest Research Laboratory at the College of Forestry at OSU. Those last two elements, the Forest Practices Act and the research lab at OSU, have their rates set in statute in a manner that requires a biennial review and revision each session. The first two uses of the tax have their rates fixed in statute, and they don't sunset. House Bill 2115 is the biennial effort to set the rates for the Forest Practices Act Administration and for the College of Forestry's research lab. For the Department of Forestry, and by the way, as the staff mentioned, this bill sets those rates for calendar years 2008 and 2009. For the Department of Forestry, we match these harvest taxes with state general fund revenues in a statutory construction of 60% general fund, 40% harvest tax in order to administer the Forest Practices Program. So there's a statutory match of general fund and harvest tax to administer the program. The tax rates that are established by the bill are set on a per thousand board feet harvested basis, and they're calculated considering three factors: the current biennium's ending balance of the fund, of the harvest tax fund, the projected budget requirements for the department for the future biennium or the next biennium, and then the third element is the forecasted harvest levels in the state for the next 2 years. In my testimony, attachment one shows you graphically the harvest levels in the state for the last 35 years or so. And as you see there, and no doubt know, harvest levels have declined during the 1990s due to reduction in harvest from federal lands. As shown in attachment two, then, which are the actual components of the harvest tax on a rate basis over the last eight biennia, the harvest tax rates actually increased during those years of the 1990s as the harvests off of federal lands declined. But since about 1999, the rates have generally stabilized, at least for the Forest Practices Program, overall. And the harvest level has also generally stabilized at about 4 billion board feet per year. And we're currently anticipating, based on a projection that our forest economist and his colleagues did in December of 2006, that the harvest level for the next 2 years will remain at about that 4 billion board feet per year level. The tax is actually collected by the Oregon Department of Revenue, and the tax receipts are transferred to the Department of Forestry and to the other recipients on a quarterly basis. At this point in the biennium, we still have one more quarter of revenue to receive for this biennium, and we'll receive that in early May of this year. And at that point, then we'll know what the full receipt is for this year and be able to kind of calculate our ending balance for this biennium. In addition, because the harvest tax is obviously a revenue source for our budget, this bill gets itself attached along the process to our budget bill and into the Ways and Means process. And of course, our budget bill, House Bill 5024, is beginning its way through the process at this time. So with that, I'll end my testimony and be glad to answer any questions that you might have. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think we'll hear from the other two on the panel that I set up, and then we'll have questions for everyone. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Ray Wilkerson with the Oregon Forest Industries Council. We represent larger private forest landowners in Oregon, and along with the group that Christina McNick represents, the Small Woodland Association, Small Woodland Owners, we basically represent the taxpayers that are affected by this bill. And as Clark explained it quite well, what those two programs are that this bill covers, we support. Both of these programs are valuable programs. We're willing to continue to share in the cost of maintaining them at the level that they need to be maintained. I think the statutory split between general fund and harvest tax for the forest practices program has been in place for as long as I can remember. I think it basically since the initiation of the Forest Practices Act, and that's worked well over the years. That cost sharing, we continue to be willing to not only comply with the Forest Practices Act, but also help pay the administrative costs, which is what this bill would do. The second program at Oregon State University Research, that doesn't have a required match like the Forest Practices Act does, but over the years, there's the harvest tax that's provided by this bill has been roughly matched by the general fund in the Ways and Means process, so it's a kind of a 50-50 unofficial cost-sharing arrangement there. And that's also an important program. We believe, obviously, that forestry continues to be a very important part of Oregon's economy, and it can continue to do that in the future, but having a good research program at Oregon State is important to being able to do that. And as I'm sure Representative Gelser knows, if not everybody on the panel, Oregon State not only has the number one baseball team in the country, but it also has the top-rated College of Forestry in the country, and that's something that we should all be proud of, but it's something that won't continue unless the college has the resources that it needs to maintain that stature. So we're very much supportive of this program and hope it can be moved down to Ways and Means and where they can fill in the blanks. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Thank you. I don't have much to add. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Christina McNitt. I represent a group called the Oregon Small Woodlands Association. Statutorily, my members are defined as those people owning 5,000 or fewer acres, but typically our average landowner has less than 100 acres. They're about 65 years old, and they may harvest once or twice in their lifetime. Generally speaking, Oregon Small Woodlands Association is supportive of the harvest tax, and we supported every session setting these rates. We're proud of the fact that we have the Forest Practices Act and that we're willing to step forward and pay for 40% of the program that administers our rules and regulations. I will say among our community that there is an ongoing discussion about the level of the increase, especially with respect to the Forest Research Lab, and that's something that as this flight plan starts to near the airport with the budget and we start marrying things up, we'll have a better idea of what the matching amount will be and what the ask will be from the Forest Research Lab, as well as I think we're anticipating an increase in the fire cost rate and some other rates. But we're supportive of that and hope that you forward this on to Ways and Means.
Thank you. Questions? Yes, Representative Witt. We'll start. Come this way, Representative Witt. First.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a statement. I just want to note that the folks that are regulated under the Oregon Forest Practices Act are here testifying in behalf of that regulation, and they are regulated to some of the highest standards in the world, and I think that it is very commendable that they're appearing here today in support of this.
Thank you. This is a community and state partnership, isn't it? Representative Berger.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'm a little, this is, if you would indulge me, I'd like to ask Mr. Seeley to explain a little further what these four things that are covered here, because my notes don't jive with his chart, and I don't know what the difference is between the OSU Research Lab and the Oregon Forestry Resources Institute. I don't know what those are and they where and how they fit in with this chart, if you wouldn't mind.
I would love the explanation myself. Thank you.
Good. Chair Barnhart, Representative Berger. I'll certainly make an attempt at that answer, speaking in part on behalf of the college and the institute, with which we have obviously a much relationship and workings. The four elements currently supported by the Harvest Tax, again, include the Forest Practices Act Administration, which we administer, the Department of Forestry, as well as the emergency fire cost.
Are those together, Mr. Chair?
Yeah, please.
Are those together in one bundling, if you will?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Berger, no, they're actually two separate rates. The forest practices rate, in fact, if we look at attachment 2, that's
yes,
maybe the easiest way to look.
That.
And if you go all the way to the right-hand side under 0507, the Forest Practices Administration that we've just talked about is the bottom of that column. It's the 55 cents per 1,000 board feet harvested. And again, that's the program that we administer, the Department of Forestry does. Going up that column, the next piece is the portion of the tax that goes to support emergency firefighting, wildfire suppression in the state. And it's one piece of a half a dozen revenue sources that feed the emergency fire cost fund. It's actually known as the Oregon Forest Land Protection Fund, but it's the fund that pays for emergency fires that go beyond initial attack. That 50-cent rate per 1,000 is in statute, but it's fixed. It doesn't sunset. And so it just exists in statute, and as it may be revised periodically, it does, but it doesn't sunset.
I'm sorry, what does the acronym stand for?
The Oregon Forest Land Protection Fund, and on the chart.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, the OFLPF is the Oregon Forest Land Protection Fund.
Right. Thank you.
Shorthand is emergency firefighting.
Right.
That fund is also administered by the Department of Forestry in concert with a four-member committee that's established by the Board of Forestry, and it's a landowner committee. They work with the department to examine the use of the fund over time. They meet quarterly. They're actually a statutory committee of the Board of Forestry. They report periodically to the board, but they, for all intents and purposes, help us administer that fund so that we have a landowner perspective in the administration of the fund. So that's the second component. The third component moving up that bar is the contribution of the harvest tax to the Oregon Forest Resources Institute. And the institute is a quasi-governmental institute. It's in fact very similar to Oregon's commodity commissions. It was created in 1991 by the legislature. Really has two fundamental mission purposes. One is to provide an educational outreach to all Oregonians about forestry in the state. And the second purpose is to more narrowly help forest landowners in the management of their properties and help education and so forth with forest landowners. The institute, created in 1991, is governed by a board of directors that are that are selected by the state forester and have terms that exist, and the board changes over time. And the statutes give the board of the institute the authority to set its own budget within the state system and to set the harvest tax rate to support that budget over time up to a maximum ceiling. There's a cap in the statutes that the board can't set their harvest tax rate above, and that rate actually gets indexed with inflation over time. But my recollection is that the Institute's board has never set the rate at the maximum cap. But they look at their needs over a fiscal year, create their budget for information and education, and then set their harvest tax rate on a fiscal year basis to support that budget. Nearly all of the revenue for the Institute is from the harvest tax. I do believe they get some donations and contributions, but in terms of state money, the harvest tax is the sole source of revenue for the Institute. And then the final component of the current rate, the top of the column there, the 67 cents per 1,000 board feet, is the portion that goes to the Forest Research Laboratory at Oregon State. And as Ray mentioned, the College of Forestry uses really three principal sources of revenue to operate the Forest Research Laboratory today: the harvest tax, state general fund money, which is those two in roughly a 50-50 proportion, but actually the vast majority of the revenue for operation of the research lab year in and year out comes from grants and federal grants and other private grants that are contributed to the sought and contributed to the research lab. If I remember correctly, the proportions roughly today are about 75% from grants and contributions, and 25% split between harvest tax and general fund. The dean of the College of Forestry, Hal Salwasser, in his testimony last week, talked about the fact that while the harvest tax and general fund are a smaller proportion of their budget, it's really in some ways the most important, because it is that portion of their revenue that funds their basic salaries of the researchers and the professors in the lab that allow those individuals then to go out and seek the grants that they do obtain. So that's kind of the makeup of the current.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That was very helpful. It put me the next question, of course, is what exactly does the bill do? Because the 50 cents you said was set. So
yes,
this changes the timing on the OSU piece, Mary.
Yeah. Every biennium, the legislature has to decide what the rates should be in two categories. I believe it's the 67-cent rate, and is it the 55-cent rate?
Yes, it is. In fact, it's the top and the bottom of that column.
Right. Got
it's
it.
The top, and top piece of differential issues.
And what we're doing here, Mr. Chair, is authorizing this to go to Ways and Means to have the determination of what those numbers are?
That's right. If you'll note the bill, line 6 and 7 and line 18 and 19, simply move the calendar year dates forward from 06 and 07 to 08 and 09 to authorize the tax for those calendar years. And that gets me to my question, unless you have another
one. I'm done. Thank you.
To my question. It looks to me as though we've got a formulaic system for establishing the general fund expenditure and also for establishing the amounts of these taxes. I'm wondering if we do have a formulaic way of doing that, if we can't simply write a bill that establishes the tax on that basis so that we don't have to do this every 2 years, every time the legislature meets. And I'm wondering what the three of you would think about that kind of idea. What I'm hearing is a formula that the Ways and Means Committee is sort of going to plug in, as it were, to this bill. How about we establish that in some agency to be established by administrative rule with a cap, like we already do with the Oregon Forest Resources Institute. and take it out of the biennial overview by the legislature. If that relationship were established by the amount, for example, of the general fund appropriation, that essentially removes discretion, makes it clear what the rule is going to say, and removes the need of this bill in future years. What would your thoughts be about something like that? And maybe this is the wrong time to ask the question, but if the answer is, gee, maybe we might like to do that, I would entertain an amendment to make that change and move it along that way.
Mr. Chair and members, again, for the record, Christina McNitt. I would actually say that to reflect my members, the conversation actually moves the other way, and they perennially ask me why OFRI isn't also set and reviewed by the legislature every 2 years, and they're a little uncomfortable, although OFRI has never overextended their authority, but they're a little uncomfortable that rate is allowed to just kind of float out there and has a potential maximum that doesn't have a legislative review. So I would say from my membership's perspective that this bill is very important in maintaining that partnership and that support by the taxpayers supporting the program.
Thank you. May I just simply add to my question so that it's clear? The formula that I have in mind is a formula that's based on the appropriation from Ways and Means. What you have been basically saying, and I have no background in this, but what I think I understand you to say is that in these two areas, the relationship between this tax and the Ways and Means Appropriation is more or less fixed. What if we wrote a bill that fixed it and that basically said the amount of this tax will be either equal to or 55% of or 45% of the amount appropriated by the Ways and Means Committee? That would allow your members to continue to have input into the process by raising the issue in the appropriations process at Ways and Means, as in effect we're going to do with this bill anyway, because we're going to send it to them to plug in the numbers, which presumably are related to the Ways and Means decision on the rest of the budget. And you had a comment on that as well, please.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Ray Wilkerson, two things. One is only half of this bill is there a formal statutory ratio. So the other one is determined a little bit differently without a mathematical requirement that's already set in statute. Second, what you're suggesting is very logical, makes a lot of sense, but this bill has been a routine bill every 2 years since I've been in this job, which is a long time. I think both the state and the taxpayers are comfortable with the routine, as Representative Witt indicated. We're all three sitting here saying the same thing. You know, it's kind of like, well, if it's not broken, don't fix it sort of a thing, because that would likely, it could risk jeopardizing that relationship and that comfort level that, you know, it's just a traditional thing, and that's, so I would be cautious about going down that road without thinking through what the unintended consequences might be. So your
suggestion comes down to four words, if I may: leave well enough alone. Thank you. I appreciate the suggestion. Are there other questions for this panel? Thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony today.
Thank you.
Are there others who would like to be heard on House Bill 2115? I think I've been told, and with that we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2115. And you have to go to your...
To my end, then I'll come back.
You'll come back. All right. Let's move then to House Bill 2030. We'll open the work session on House Bill 2030. Did you have a summary for us?
Yes, I did, Mr. Chair. Thank you. In this bill in particular, it's a bill that's been discussed previously in the public hearing by the tax collectors, representatives of the tax collectors, and what it does is it repeals the sunset date for what's called the bankruptcy account, which the collectors are allowed to create and maintain in order to defray costs when they have to incur legal costs to go after taxes of bankrupt accounts. And every June, they have to basically empty that account out and distribute the balance after they've taken care of their legal costs with it, and they take the rest of the balance and they put that in the unsegregated account for distribution to local counties. The amendment that we've brought before you fixes something that legislative council noted, and that is that if the repeal date, which is September 1st, 2007, occurs, well, if, let's say, the signed day date, which is 91 days after signed die, if the effective date of this bill falls after the sunset date, it would create a problem. All of the delinquency accounts would have to be terminated, and then they'd have to reinstate them again. So legislative council prepared the Dash 1 amendment, which says in the event that the signed die, the act becomes law after the repeal date, then there's a retroactive piece so that these delinquent accounts do not have to be terminated and then restarted again.
Okay. And that's the Dash 1.
That is the Dash 1.
Dash 1. All right. is there a reason why we have why we don't have an emergency clause on this bill? Is there a constitutional prohibition on this bill or bills of this sort having an emergency clause?
I don't believe there is. I'm getting a
There is. We can't do it. It's a tax administration. That's right. Thank you. I keep thinking that the emergency clause prohibition only applies to taxes, but it doesn't. It applies to tax administration as well as to tax bills. So that's the reason. So this rather awkward mechanism in the Dash 1 amendments is to essentially allow them to keep these accounts open, knowing that there will be a new law coming into effect soon that makes it all okay.
Thanks.
All right. Thank you. Are we ready on this bill? Are others ready to go ahead with
it? We have a quorum.
We do have a quorum, a bare quorum. If anybody would prefer that we put this bill off and deal with it at a later time, we can do that, or we can deal with it now and send it to the floor for adoption.
Mr. Chair, based on this this amendment, I would think we should move quickly, lest the bill that Representative Riley has proposed that was mentioned in the front page of the Oregonian today become effective.
Would you enlighten us?
The plain English bill?
Oh. tax laws will never comply with that bill, no matter what you do. The first thing you learn in law school, Representative Reed, is that tax laws are the way they are because they are that way.
Solid logic.
Not because they are logical or because anyone can actually read them. And it's unfortunate that that's true, but it is true. Would you do you have a motion for us?
Mr. Chair, I would move the adoption of the Dash 1 amendment stated February 26th.
Thank you. Is there further discussion of the Dash 1s? Everyone clear on what they're about? All right. Is there objection to the Dash 1s? Seeing none, the Dash 1s are adopted. Representative Reed?
Mr. Chair, I would move the House Bill 2030 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation and, if it's appropriate, perhaps to be placed on the consent calendar?
Well, let's get to that one next down the road.
Okay.
Representative Reed moves House Bill 2031 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? Are there any objections? I don't see any. Please call the roll.
Representative Burden.
Aye.
Representative Broom.
Excused.
Representative
Butler. Excused. Representative Gelson. Excused.
Representative
Olson. Aye. Representative Rosenbaum. Excused.
Representative Witt.
Aye.
And Chair Barnhart.
We got there. Chair votes aye. The bill having received the required majority is passed. And the bill goes to the floor with the due pass recommendation as amended. Now, is there an objection to Representative Reed's suggestion that we place the bill on the consent calendar?
Nobody's jumping up to want to carry it either.
Well, actually, Mr. Chair, I think the Vice Chair should probably step up.
You
and
know,
carry that bill.
I like that suggestion.
Representative Reed, would you carry the bill?
With pleasure. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Berger.
Could I move that the rules be suspended to allow Representative Broom to vote on this?
You may. Is there any objection to suspending the rules to allow Representative Broom to vote on the motion that sent House Bill 2030 to the floor with a due pass recommendation? Hearing none, Representative Broom?
Aye, and thank you, Representative. I appreciate that.
Representative Broom votes aye. That takes us out of the bare majority.
Strong majority.
It's a strong majority. Thank you.
Representative
Berger?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move that the rules be suspended and Representative Rosenbaum be allowed to vote on this bill.
Representative Berger has asked unanimous consent for Representative Rosenbaum to be allowed to vote on House Bill 2030 as amended. Is there any objection to that?
Mr. Chair, I don't know about it.
I just have a reason. I'm joking. Yeah.
Right. Representative Broom is joshing with us. Representative Rosenbaum, how do you vote?
I vote aye.
Representative Rosenbaum votes aye. Our majority is getting stronger. Thank you very much. Is there anything further on the work session on House Bill 2030? If not, we'll close the work session, and we'll open a work session on House Bill 2032. Mary?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2032 has been heard previously, and you received testimony from the tax collector's representative, and it would require that the department pay delinquent taxes, interest, and penalties on homestead property for which the property tax deferral is claimed for qualified seniors or disabled persons who initially claimed the deferral on or after January 1, 2008. This is I'm reading the Dash 2 amendment, actually. The original bill would have been retroactive, and the amendment will allow this to be prospective. And this is the work of a work group that met at your recommendation, Chair Barnhart, in order to resolve issues that arose during the initial session between OIP, Oregon Independent Fund people, and the tax collector's original proposal.
Very good. Further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Olson.
Yeah, just Representative Witten and I were assigned to this task, if
please.
You recall.
Yes.
And
I do.
And we were diligent in responding to the direction that we were given.
And the Chair appreciates that very
That's
much.
That's right. We met twice, February 6th and February 13th, and we had a great group of people that got involved. And I got to tell you, John Phillips was the disaster master, so to speak. I mean, really helping me out understand this a little bit more, I think, in Zim. But, you know, the goal that we kind of pursued as this was to kind of protect the Oregon Project independence, but also at the same time meet the needs of what the county tax assessors needed, too, to try to catch up to things where they were for delinquent taxes and everything. And meeting together twice, we found a solution, and that's what you have right now in the Dash 2s.
Very good. Thank you. Representative Witt, did you want to add to that?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was moved by Representative Olson's leadership on this bill. And occasionally a bill comes along that is the perfect solution to a problem. And the absolute perfect amendments are constructed. I'm not suggesting that these amendments or this bill is it.
Thank you. You're way out there, Representative.
But I am in full support of this. It was a great job.
Thank you. Good. Further discussion? I want to make certain that I understand what these amendments do. I don't think I've seen them before today. And I think it would be useful if we spent a couple minutes and just went through the amendments. This is not a replacement of the bill, but an addition to the bill, isn't it? I don't see any. There may be some, but I'm reading it quickly. I don't see any real deletions. I guess there's a couple on this bill. So I think it might be useful for us to make certain that we understand where we're going with this thing. We're adding a bunch of sections that we're amending. We're amending all of the sections that were originally amended, or sections of ORS that were originally amended by the bill, and we're adding 5 additional sections that we're amending, all in Chapter 311.
John,
would you come up and thank you? Maybe you could explain the amendment as we go through here, and just so the committee gets comfortable. I apologize. I hadn't seen the amendments until the committee started this morning or this afternoon, so it would be helpful for me at least to get a walkthrough.
Sure. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, John Phillips, the Oregon Department of Revenue, I'd be happy to walk through the bill's amendments, the dash twos. Essentially, let me point out the critical changes, first of all, really occurs to the concept on page 2, beginning in line 41. So in the dash 2 amendments, if you look to page 1 of the dash 2, line 11, that's where the change is made. And it previously, the original bill said that the department basically pay the delinquent taxes, interest, and penalties that are delinquent as of the date of the claim. That the idea of that was to encompass all of the existing and outstanding and taxes that were due at the time of the application. Under current law, the application contemplates future taxes due being paid by the Department of Revenue. The concept of the bill was that when somebody applies, they come to the department with an application and they owe a lot of back taxes. Those are held in abeyance. Interest accrues on those, and the collectors were interested in getting those old books cleared up. And so that's why the language said that delinquent taxes, penalties at the time of the claim that were due. The new provision says interest, penalties, and taxes that are delinquent as of November 15th following the date an initial application for deferral is filed. So it focuses on applications filed after the effective date of the bill. And that's where we try to make a prospective bill out of this. The other changes, some of them are minor, and the bulk of the amendment deals with just sort of conforming the language to add the word fees, because if we're to pay some of these back taxes, we want to be able to also follow what we pay back through the collection process and final lien process so that we're be able to collect fees too and also satisfy judgments for fees that have been paid. So it just adds the word fees to the whole concept in the program.
Well, these are minor changes to these other statutes.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I think
penalties and fees is a phrase that recurs several times. Then Section 7 on page 3 of the amendment, appears to set this up for applications that are filed after the beginning of January 08. So someone who applied this year would not get the benefit of having that delinquent taxes being part of the deferral program.
Mr. Chair, I believe that's correct, and I think that's because by the time the bill passes, it will have already been beyond the application period for this coming year.
I see. Again, tax administration doesn't have an emergency clause. Thank you. That's a great explanation. I appreciate it. Are there other questions for Mr. Phillips? I think we've got it. Thank you very much. Certainly. All right, Representative Olson, did you have a motion?
Well, absolutely, Mr. Chair. I would make a motion to move the dash twos into House Bill 2032.
Representative Olson moves the dash twos into House Bill 2032. Discussion? Representative Bruin?
Well, I was just, I'll ask Representative Olson if he knows the answer. I think it's been assumed, but I just want to make sure one of the big question marks came from the Oregon Association of Area Agencies on Aging Disabilities. I want to just hear conclusively that they're behind this now, and you would...
We had a large group of everybody representing the disabled, the elderly, and we all got together.
That's what I assumed, but thank you for clarifying that.
Well, and I would refer you to the revenue impact statement written by Mary on the dash twos. That rather than being several million dollars, this item is down to $15,000 a year, $30,000 for the biennium. And so, in effect, it doesn't have any. It will have no significant effect on other possible uses of the funds, which I think was the concern that those other groups had. Further discussion of the dash two amendments. Is there objection to the dash two amendments becoming part of the bill? Without objection, it is so ordered. Representative Olson?
Mr. Chair, I'd move then the House Bill 2032 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Olson moves House Bill 2032 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Any objections? Call the roll.
Aye.
Aye.
Excused. Excused.
Representative
Olson.
Aye.
Representative Reed.
Aye.
Representative
Whitmore.
Aye.
Representative Witt.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. And the motion having received the required majority is passed. The bill goes to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Would either of you like to carry this bill?
You want to flip the coin?
I was thinking it was
arm wrestle
fodder for a consent agenda.
Is there any objection to placing it on the consent agenda? It goes on the consent agenda. Take care of that. You both escaped. All right. I think we have. Is there any further discussion on the work session on House Bill 2032? Yes, Representative Berger.
I wonder if you'd reconsider that consent agenda thing. I have. Notice in my notebook,
yes,
in my folder of emails that I have from folks who had concerns about this bill and may not understand that the amendments have changed things. Mm-hmm. So I guess I would...
That's an objection. I would consider that an objection.
Yeah, I'm thinking about it, and I would really prefer that it go on the floor from the work group. I'm sorry, you guys, but...
No. Mr. Chair, I'd volunteer.
Representative Olson will carry the bill. Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen, very much. And thank you, Representative Berger. I think you're right. Once a bill like this has achieved some notoriety, it at least ought to have an explanation on the floor, even if it's only a two-minute one. Is there anything further to come up the work session on House Bill 2032? If not, we close the work session. Our agenda for today having been exhausted, we are adjourned.